Fly today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less, guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
A Wisconsin man in March pleaded guilty to kidnapping 13-year-old Jamie Kloss and killing her parents. Now, he's set to be sentenced in May in Wisconsin. Wisconsin does not have the death penalty, so likely he will be spending his life behind bars. Professor David Dow is the founder and director of the Texas Innocence Network. I had a chance to ask him what this killer, convicted killer's life will be like once he's behind bars.
It's going to be horrible. I'm not sure he'll spend that many years in prisons. Prisons are dangerous, violent places, and you don't get good health care, and they're not feeding you food that's designed to allow you to live to be into your hundreds. And so I'm not sure that he's going to have particularly pleasant time in prison. But I also think that that case really illustrates something important about the death penalty, which is that people who commit heinous crimes are people that have some fundamental problem. I mean, if you're just trying to get inside the head of somebody who would kill two complete strangers just because he saw a young girl at a bus stop one day and decided that he was going to kidnap her and hold her hostage, if you try to climb inside that person's head, you can't do it. That person has done something that somebody who does not have severe mental health problems cannot even begin to fathom.
The Walt Disney Company is hinting at cutting more jobs after its acquisition of 21st Century Fox. Disney CEO Bob Iger says the company has only started to make global layoffs as it works to incorporate its newly acquired assets. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. Today we are speaking with Professor Claire Brown. She is the author of Buddhist Economics, an enlightened approach to the dismal science, certainly off the beaten track for what you usually see in the realm of the financial. Professor Brown, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here today.
It's great to join you, Derek.
So my first question is, what is the sound of one hand clapping in order to register approval of the Federal Reserve raising interest rates?
Let me tell you that definitely they're going to be raising interest rates, but it's not because of what Trump's done. It's because the economy was reaching what they call full employment and things are going well.
And I guess what you want is basically an extension of that systemically. Tell us what Buddhist economics is and how would it work?
Great. Well, you know, Buddhist economics rests upon the idea that people are actually kind and altruistic and not just selfish, and that we're all interconnected with each other and with nature, and that we care about our quality of life. We don't just care about how much income or consumption we have, because we're a pretty rich nation now. So we care enormously about relationships and our health and education and how our communities are working. And so that's what Buddhist economics is all about. It brings together equity and shared prosperity, along with a sustainable economy and relieving suffering around the world.
But is it possible for Adam Smith's invisible hands to be pressed together in the lotus position, in addition to kind of guiding the economy along?
Yes, it is, because, you know, Adam Smith also wrote The Theory of Moral Sentiments. At the same time, he was writing his more famous book. And, you know, George Akerlof's Animal Spirits, he loved my book. He said, you know, actually, our economy would be much better if we did structure it based upon the idea that people are kind and altruistic. And the Federal Reserve is really interested and knows we should be measuring economic performance not just as economic growth, but as a measure that's much more holistic, that covers the quality of life as well as what we're doing to the environment.
Now, we see all sorts of reports in the media, for example, happiness indexes. We read that Denmark is the happiest nation in the world. And then we look at the stock market. It's booming, obviously, or at least the Dow Jones. Employment seems to be up. But what is the real measure that we should be taking in the context of what you're proposing here?
Well, what we should really care about right now, I think, is our number one challenge of global warming. And we should not be thinking about, oh, we're going to just rev up fossil fuels and we'll have economic growth and our economy will boom. Because you know what? We're all going to die from that. It hurts our health, and we're not creating a modern economy that's going to be competitive. So we need to think much more about, oh, what's the quality of life? What are we doing to the earth? And how well are we going to be living, and how well will our kids and grandkids be living?
We're speaking with Claire Brown. She is the author of Buddhist Economics, An Enlightened Approach to the Dismal Science. What would the first step be in implementing a Buddhist economy? I mean, how would we start to go about this? How would we start to conceptualize it? And what initial practical steps could be taken in order to make it happen?
Well, you know, economist Joe Stiglitz, Nobel Prize winner, and others have said, look, an economy chooses its level of inequality. We also know we choose our level of global warming. So we have all kinds of policies that are known to reduce inequality, such as progressive taxation, higher minimum wages, child welfare payments. We have all kinds of ways to help everyone be better off, instead of just the rich. Right now, when we have economic growth, it goes disproportionately to the top 1%. And then we know how to stop putting carbon in the air. We have roadmaps that teach us how to go to clean energy. So in Buddhist economics, I pull together all of these policies and bring them together into one major program.
Interesting.
And what...
For example, say President Bernie Sanders, and I am imagining him in a position of meditation, were to come to office in the year 2020. What would his first proposal to a Congress be in your package of economic plans, assuming that you were his top economic advisor?
Oh, I think he would, first of all, make taxes more progressive. He would set up programs to improve education. He would make sure everyone gets health care. He would care about child care for working parents. He would care enormously about what we're doing to the environment and really join with the UN COP21 proposals to really move to clean energy. He would follow the California plan, I think, on clean energy. He would really understand that we care about the quality of life for all families in the U.S., not just for the rich people, the top 1%.
How did you come up with the idea that the practices involved in Buddhism might be a good way of organizing our economic system?
Well, I was teaching Econ 1, and we don't really like teaching Econ 1 a lot because we use very simplistic competitive models. Mm-hmm. And I practiced Tibetan Buddhism, and I was out walking my greyhound. My greyhound sort of looked at me and said, "How would Buddha teach Econ 1? You don't seem very happy doing it." And I thought, what a great idea. Let me think about it. And so I started teaching an undergraduate class called Buddhist Economics that was super popular. I still teach it. And we set up, a whole way of thinking about it in a way that made sense to me and lots of people. And then I ended up writing the book.
Now, and we're speaking with Professor Claire Brown, who is the author of Buddhist Economics, An Enlightened Approach to the Dismal Science. I will admit that my knowledge of Buddhism is very rudimentary. But as I understand it, the key to it is letting go of the ego and letting go of the self. And I'm wondering if you think the sort of cult of personality that grew up around Fed Chair Alan Greenspan back in the 1990s, or even many of the billionaires or financiers of today, is sort of the opposite extreme of what you're talking about here.
Yes. Now, I think that's actually one of the biggest problems with free market economics. We really focus on the individual, and we say people are selfish, they only care about themselves, and that's just not working for us right now. So in Buddhist economics, you start off with saying people are kind and altruistic, we care about each other, and in fact, everybody's well-being is interconnected, and people's well-being is interconnected with the earth. The earth isn't sitting out there for human domination to just improve our standard of living, but it's there for us to protect and enjoy and thrive together. So everybody's going to thrive together and thrive with Earth, or we're all going to die together.
These are wonderful ideas. How do you actually get people to buy into them, given what is our current political landscape?
Well, I think if you just take away the 30% hardline Trump people, the other 60 to 70% are really looking for these kinds of insights and guidance and help. I can't believe the amount of attention that this book has gotten from around the world. I get calls and emails, and people are saying, yes, we have to find a better path where we can all have more meaningful lives and help each other and feel better about life. People right now feel pretty awful about life and what's happening.
Well, I'm wondering if someone from Tibet may have reached out to you, the Dalai Lama. Maybe that's the change we need to make right there, the Dalai Lama instead of the Dalai Lama. We've been speaking with Professor Claire Brown. She is the author of Buddhist Economics, An Enlightened Approach to the Dismal Science. She's also a professor of economics at UC Berkeley. Professor Brown, thanks so much for spending the time with us today, and namaste.
It was great talking with you.
I'm Will Flitzer in the Situation Room, and you're listening to Now It's the News with Derek Blair.
Information on Now It's the News, go to nowitsthenews.com.
American investors lost $3.7 trillion of net worth in the fourth quarter of 2018. When your portfolio's value decreases right before or early in your retirement, it can have a crippling effect. It's called sequence of returns risk, and it's a risk you simply cannot afford. We're Sound Income Strategies, and we're on a mission to help hardworking Americans transform their hard-earned savings into steady, predictable retirement income. Call now for free, no-obligation information to help you get started on your way to steady, predictable retirement income. Call 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Investment advisory services offered through Sound Income Strategies, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisory firm. Let's transform that risk into income. Call 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Sound Income Strategies, powered by the Retirement Income Store.
This report is brought to you by the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, a contractor to the beef checkoff. Did you know 42% of people use their smart devices in the kitchen, and almost half of them have used it for cooking assistance? Modern technology is being applied in the kitchen in new and exciting ways. Now, advancements in artificial intelligence can even bring the skills of a chef and the knowledge of a rancher to the home kitchen with Chuck Knows Beef. Chuck Knows Beef, an all-knowing virtual beef expert powered by Google Artificial Intelligence, is here to meet the newest generation of family cooks with beef inspiration and technology. Chuck's knowledge can be easily accessed through a smart speaker. Jennifer Jasinski, chef and restaurant owner.
Chuck was designed to fit consumer needs with instant access to recipes, cut and nutrition information, and cooking tips wherever they happen to be. He can serve a great steak recipe and even text you the shopping list.
For more information, visit ChuckKnowsBeef.com. Again, that's ChuckKnowsBeef.com.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in a critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heide & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heide & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heide & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. We have with us today John Hodgman. He is a former Daily Show correspondent. He played the deranged millionaire. He played PC to Justin Long's Mac on those commercials, which you remember from a few years back. He hosts the Judge John Hodgman podcast, and he is a New York Times best-selling writer. His most recent work is Vacation Land, True Stories from Painful Beaches. John Hodgman, welcome to Now It's the News. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So you played a deranged millionaire on The Daily Show. What insight has that given you now that we have a deranged billionaire in the White House?
Well, I was the deranged millionaire specifically in response to Donald Trump in 2011, especially 2012. I had been for a long time on The Daily Show the resident expert. I was a pompous, professorial, know-it-all lunatic, spouting incredibly deranged facts with a straight face. And then Trump started wandering on to cable news networks as if they had just left the door open and he came in to sit down and spout conspiracy theories about then-President Obama's birth. And I remember saying to the writers and to John, we need someone like that. We're a news show, too. We need our own wealthy white lunatic to wander onto the show and spout nonsense for no other reason than they're a wealthy white lunatic. Mm-hmm. And so that's how the deranged millionaire began. What I quickly discovered, though, over the couple of years that I did that act was my comedy to that date was built on taking real-life events and extrapolating them out to their most absurd extremities.
Right.
Trump didn't need help with that. Trump had that covered. Trump was able to go to the most unthinkable places, and it left me with basically nowhere to go. There was no comedy that I could offer that would compete with the long-form improv that Donald Trump, I now realize, has been doing for his entire life. He's been playing the role of Donald Trump. So by the time John was handing the show over to Trevor Noah, and I was in my mid-40s at that point, I started to realize that the kind of fake facts that had populated my earlier books and my work at The Daily Show just didn't have the same attraction to me anymore. I, for one reason, everyone's doing it now, creating false realities and alternate histories and populating them with invented facts. That's part of our everyday political life.
Right.
But also, I was on stage a lot of the time doing my imitation of stand-up comedy and found myself gravitating more and more to stories that were not in character, but more straightforward stories about me, an actual human being, John Hodgman, a weird dad, a husband, a white male monster with bad facial hair staring down the second half of his life. And that became eventually what you now, I presume, have in your hand, and I hope maybe you have two copies of Vacationland. True Stories from Painful Beaches, which is my book.
Indeed, and I'm looking at it right now. I'm very glad that you have found that solution, and it's a, how do I want to express this, a more realistic and probably wiser approach to reacting to the over-the-top antics of this particular age of comedy and of politics. What do you think satire does at this point? What do you think so far of the way that satire has responded to Donald Trump? And is it still painted into a corner, or is it going to ultimately come out of this stronger?
Well, you know, I'm glad it's not my job to make political humor for a daily show. Mm-hmm. It takes a certain strength of character. And Trevor and Seth Meyers and obviously John Oliver and Sam B, they're all doing remarkable work in that regard. But you look at Jimmy Kimmel, you know, who's doing ostensibly a comedy show. It's a very funny nightly talk show. Mm-hmm. But his monologues are notable these days not for finding the funny thing to say about what's happening, but expressing his own terror and dismay at what's going on.
Yeah.
I think that the role that political comedy had during the George W. Bush era was of a different kind and different, obviously of a different time.
Right.
The press at that time was terrified of saying anything negative about the Bush administration for fear of being labeled unpatriotic and part of the liberal conspiracy and everything else. For John Stewart to go and simply say what was actually happening in the war in Iraq, what was actually the kind of venality that was leading to that pointless and destructive policy, that was so profoundly liberating because you weren't hearing it elsewhere on cable news. That was the, you know, all humor is based on exploring taboo. You know, you use swear words in jokes because people still have a taboo about hearing about bodily functions.
Right.
The taboo that John was breaking at that time was simply telling the truth because the truth itself had become taboo. Now we're in a different place where every, you know, I think news organizations having been branded the enemy openly by the Donald Trump administration are much more emboldened to do their work as investigatory bodies and as checks to power, which is not what they were 10 years, 12 years, 14 years ago, do you know?
Right.
So I think, the jokes are just super short stories, right? and stories form the same purpose throughout time and throughout all culture. They exist to retain history. Back when there was only an oral culture, you told the story of the Odyssey so that people would remember it. You tell a story to morally instruct and provide cohesion for a community. But they also exist simply to distract. You tell a story around a campfire because you don't want to think about what's in the darkness behind you. Stories offer, and I think jokes in particular, offer catharsis and consolation and a reminder that you're not alone. So I think the line you have to play these days is if you see something absurd, such as the venality of, in my opinion, and I think the opinion of anyone who looks at it, of the Republican Party rallying around as problematic a campaigner and candidate as Roy Moore, there's funny stuff. There are funny jokes to be made there, but you don't want to make them at the glib you don't want to make them without acknowledging. You don't want to make them glibly, is what I'm trying to say. There's a word I'm looking for I can't find.
You don't want to fail to acknowledge the essential terror that underlies what you're talking about.
Well, you don't want to make them. I finally found that word that I was looking for because I'm a professional writer. You don't want to make them at that glib expense of the people who allegedly were Roy Moore's victims. Or even if you acknowledge that he did date teenagers with the permission of their moms, that there's something inherently terrible about that, and it reminds you of where women were 20, 30 years ago, that would be an acceptable thing to do. Right. So you want to reveal those truths in your jokes and not merely paste them over. But a lot of them, time, you just need to say things are terrible, unless you think things are going great. In which case, I'm here to hear your point of view. We disagree.
More coming up next. You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. And MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is around $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 855-90-BIBLE. That's 855-90-BIBLE. 855-90-BIBLE.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
House Democrats are wrapping up a three-day retreat in Leesburg, Virginia, where they discuss their agenda for the upcoming session of Congress. Massachusetts Democratic Congresswoman Catherine Clark, vice chair of the House Democratic Caucus, says the caucus is united.
I am proud to report that 100 days into this new majority, the caucus is strong. We are focused. We are unified on getting things done for the American people.
The city of Boston is discussing safety measures for the 123rd Boston Marathon, 6 years after the Boston Marathon bombing. City Police Commissioner William Gross stresses the importance of staying alert as a civilian.
We are all each other's eyes and ears, and to watch out because there are folks hell-bent on harming others.
The marathon is set for Monday. This is USA Radio News.
There's no question you need omega-3s, but which form should you take?
fish oil, or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you, we'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now. 1-800-399-6392. 1-800-399-6392. That's 1-800-399-6392.
And now, it's the news.
We're speaking with John Hodgman. He's the author of Vacation Land, True Stories from Painful Beaches. Roy Moore, we just got reminded about a lot of things about the South, some of which are good and some of which are not so good. You were born and raised and educated in New England, and it's the focus of a good deal of your book. What do you think people should be reminded about regarding that region?
Well, you know, so my book, first of all, it's not a lot of ponderous social commentary. It's mostly funny stories about me not knowing how to handle life in the various rural communities where I've spent time and lived. I am a creature of the city. I'm an asthmatic, weird only child from Boston originally and now from New York. But I spent quite a bit of my youth in the rural western part of Massachusetts and now a lot of my adulthood in my wife's family's world of coastal Maine, which is remote from any city. And people think of New England as being this sort of big blue liberal monolith. But of course, it's not that at all. The story of New England is the story not only of the United States, but of any culture between cities and the countryside.
I am definitely convinced, by the way, that the Pepperidge Farm cookie guy voted for Trump.
Oh, well, you mean from beyond the grave? I think that would be a voter fraud.
Well, such things are not unheard of, I suppose.
You can't vote there from here. But yeah, there's a reason that Bernie Sanders was not as strong on gun control as Hillary Clinton, because he's a senator from Vermont. Vermont is notoriously liberal, quote unquote, but it's a rural state where people do a lot of hunting. People own a lot of guns. Cities are always going to be more cosmopolitan because they sit at the intersections of rivers and harbors because they are built on trade. Trade means people from other cultures coming through and living together in dense environments and understanding that they're just other people in the world. And this is not to put down rural communities at all. There's a reason that rural communities are more tradition-minded, because they are traditionally agrarian. They are you harbor your family against the harshness of the weather,
right,
no matter where you live, in order to keep your crops raising. You have small communities that value consistency and by nature are just sort of more homogenous than a city is. And there's no surprise that more conservative values, and by the way, I think conservative values are values. You know, I think family, tradition, continuity within a community, these are all wonderful values, you know. But there's a reason that they root themselves in rural agrarian places more than they do in cities. And that's true in western Massachusetts even in 2017. I remember going out there with my mom and dad at a time when I thought, I was maybe 9, 10, 11 years old, and I thought all of Massachusetts were people like us, people who watched Doctor Who and listened to public radio and ate in front of Brideshead Revisited. You know, suddenly I'm going out to, the hill counties and seeing real poverty that I didn't know existed and understanding what that meant, and seeing a lot of billboards for country music stations. And I was like, where am I? And I was like, well, these are your neighbors too. This is all part of your region as well. And Maine, of course, is very similar. I mean, Portland, Maine, is a profoundly interesting and vibrant and young, diverse city that has now been made much more diverse by the West African resettled refugees there. It's amazing. It's an amazing example of how diversity, in Lewiston, Maine in particular, how diversity revives a place that is otherwise and economically imperiled. But there's a lot of Maine that is profoundly unurban, right? And Paul LePage, the governor of Maine, was really the opening act for Trumpism and the bellwether that rural communities were really unhappy and about to express their unhappiness in a much more loaded way than they had previously.
Right. You know, it's interesting, and I will say this as someone who early in adulthood moved from the San Francisco Bay Area to rural southern Oregon. It almost sounds as if you conceptualized vacation land, or at least that it ended up as sort of a contemporary version of the Aganai.
Right. I suppose so. You know, I didn't set out specifically to write a book about New England or about my anxiety about the dump or about middle age or the transitions that we go through in our life when we abandon one landscape for another. That is to say, the landscape for me of the place of my youth, which is Massachusetts, to the place that is my future because it belongs to my wife, which is Maine, but also the landscape of youth itself, the moment that we realize that we, even no matter how many cool T-shirts we buy, we're not young people anymore, that youth belongs to the young, and what is left for us is time and then death, and how do we confront that with grace and purpose? You know, that's part of what vacation land is as well. But ultimately, I just told the stories that I have, and some of them are funny, and some of them are a little sad, and I think most of them are good. I wrote them that way on purpose, and I just hope people enjoy it.
Well, I definitely do enjoy them, and it's been a pleasure speaking with you, and I think you hold out hope for all of us middle-aged Gen Xers who are searching for something beyond the sarcastic barbs of our misbegotten youth. John Hodgman is the author of Vacation Land. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Strange news of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Animal style, this time. A Pennsylvania woman who rescued a piglet that was darting in and out of rush hour traffic is getting help from local businesses to fund a surgery it needs to survive. In the city, you have to be a piglet and get surgery to survive. Francesca McAndrews says she was driving to work when she saw the tiny swine dodging cars in Lancaster last month. She slammed on her brakes and caught the little pig. She says she'd had some practice catching pigs at the fair. Well, who in Lancaster, Pennsylvania hasn't, truly? She thinks the piglet fell off a livestock truck. Veterinarians say the animal needs surgery on a hernia it likely developed in the fall from the truck. Indonesia has developed armed police and soldiers to help villagers on the island of Java fight back against marauding monkeys. Yes, marauding monkeys have been terrorizing their area, stealing food, and even attacking vulnerable elderly residents and a child. The long-tailed macaques have been growing increasingly bold in their interaction with humans. In the Boyolali district of central Java, north of the city of Solo, the monkeys had started coming here 2 months ago, said Police Chief Aries Andi. After we shot one of them, the rest didn't come back. Now, they're back again. And this time, they're mad. A task force set up to patrol the area will shoot monkeys if necessary. They shoot monkeys, don't they? He said, although the traps will also be used to return others to the forest. As long as they don't disturb the villagers, we won't shoot them, said Andy. The patrols are comprised of villagers and local officials supported by police, soldiers, and members of a hunting association, he said. Maybe Rodrigo Duterte should get in on this. Two Chinese officials have been fired for involvement in superstitious activities, including casting spells to aid promotions
and attending geomancy courses under the guise of business trips, according to state media. Geomancy. We'll find out more about that in just a moment. Members of the ruling Communist Party are not supposed to follow any religion in officially atheist China, and the government takes a particularly harsh line on officials who practice it, or at least what it deems are superstitious folk beliefs. Xinhua news agency said that Tang Yansong, a former county housing official in the central province of Hunan, went on 5 feng shui training courses. That's right. That's what geomancy is, feng shui. Feng shui in China is witchcraft. Yes. You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair.
Wouldn't it be great to see your windows in a whole new light? Do it right. Call your local neighborhood experts. Budget Blinds. You'll get beautiful style and personalized service for every budget. We bring the showroom right to your home, so you can choose from hundreds of blinds, shades, shutters, and drapes. Plus, smart home window coverings you control with the touch of a button. And with Budget Blinds, we do it all for you. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy. There's a reason why Budget Blinds is the number one provider of custom window coverings in North America. When we say we have style and service for every budget, we really mean it. So let's get your home a whole lot of gorgeous. Get your free consultation right at home. Just go online to budgetblinds.com or call 855-BUDGET-BLINDS. Call 855-BUDGET-BLINDS for your free consultation right at home. Now that's beautiful. At participating independently owned and operated franchises only. Ask for details.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Retail Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
And now, it's the news.
You're listening to Now It's the News. I'm Derek Blair. More strange news of the week, ladies and gentlemen. The owner of a Florida video game store is challenging a town law that prevented him from displaying an inflatable character, Mario, outside his store. Scott Fisher, owner of Gone Broke Gaming, was required to move the 10-foot inflatable Super Mario that once stood outside his store or face a fine of $100 for each day it remained. Fisher received support from Institute for Justice and filed a federal lawsuit against the city, claiming the law violates the First Amendment to the Constitution. Today we are speaking with Annie Jacobson. She is the author of Phenomena, the Secret History of the U.S. Government's Investigation into Extrasensory Perception and Psychokinesis, also the author of Area 51, The Pentagon's Brain, and Operation Paperclip. Annie Jacobson, welcome back to Now It's the News. Thanks for being here again.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. So, in the wake of the Snowden revelations, we know that the government is monitoring our telephony. Given your book and their efforts in the field of mentalism, is the government also monitoring our telepathy as well?
I don't think their interest is civilian. I think that it's, and this is after looking at the documents, that it's really about intelligence collection of foreign assets.
What caused them to go in this unusual direction to begin with.
What I found fascinating when I was researching and reporting the book is that the government's interest in this arena goes all the way back to year one for the CIA, and that was 1947 when the agency was created. And that's because the Nazis had an obsession with the occult. And everything that the Nazis were doing in terms of weaponization, the Americans and the Soviets wanted to borrow, and did borrow, and built upon. And so we found this cache of documents called Das Annenerbe. They were Himmler's pseudo-science department documents. We got half, the Soviets got half. That's where the psychic race began. But what I found most interesting in all this research was that this stuff is still going on today. And that was unusual to come across, because the idea, the consensus was, and certainly that was being put out by DOD, was that this had all ended in the 90s with the remote viewing program.
But, you know, that's fascinating. We're speaking with Annie Jacobson, the author of Phenomena. You just mentioned a sort of psychic space race. And of course, in the 50s and 60s and 70s, we were in a space race with the Soviet Union to kind of maintain a competitive edge in all military-related affairs. What is the state, or what was the state, I guess it continues to be, the state of the psychic space race?
As far as the space race, you know, the analogy, I think, was this idea that anything that the other side is doing, we have to be ahead of. And the idea of divination, because let's face it, that's what ESP is. It's divining. It is non-scientific. It has not yet reached a general theory. Therefore, that's why it's called pseudoscience by hard scientists. And so it's in the hypothesis stage. Nevertheless, as CIA reported in documents, as did DOD, there is incontrovertible proof that this phenomena happens, you know, in a fickle nature. And so they're trying to collect and to know the unknown. I'll give you one little detail. I came across a program that had never been reported before that the Defense Intelligence Agency, that's DIA, our DIA, was running, and it was called Project P. Well, the P stood for prophecy. They were trying to see if they could have psychics predict the future of certain moves by certain enemy nations.
That's interesting. I wonder if they could use that same technology to predict what their budgets will be in any particular year, because they don't seem to do a particularly good job of that.
And I'm sure that's part and parcel to the problem, because all of this is working under extreme special access programs. We're talking really restricted protocols, black budgets, and things were kept secret, by the way, for two reasons. One, because they wanted it to remain secret from the Soviets, and from the Iranians, for example. And two, because there is an extraordinary amount of stigma attached to this. I mean, congressmen did not want to be revealed as being the ones who were supporting this kind of, you know, very out there investigations.
Do you have a sense of how much money we have spent historically and how much continues to be spent on these programs?
Well, it's certainly minutiae compared to, let's say, the subject of my last book, which was DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. Those hard science agencies are spending billions of dollars, literally, and those are just the budgets we know about. So the psychic phenomena programs are in the tens of millions. It's really a very a morsel, if you will, of the kind of budgets. But then again, you don't know where these programs overlap with other programs. For example, you know, ESP has reemerged in the modern era at the Pentagon. Only now it's disguised. They don't call it ESP. That sounds far too supernatural. They call it anomalous cognition. And the research is being led by neurobiologists, you know, computer engineers. So who knows specifically where the budget allotment is coming from? Are the budgets coming out of the neural research, or are they partitioned off to the anomalous cognition programs? I don't know, and that is unknowable. We need a psychic to tell us.
We're speaking with Annie Jacobson. She's the author of Phenomena, The Secret History of the U.S. Government's Investigations into Extrasensory Perception and Psychokinesis. You say that early in its history, the CIA dispatched one of its scientists to Mexico in search of an elusive hallucinogenic, a mushroom. Can you confirm or deny that Timothy Leary was working for the CIA?
Timothy Leary was at Harvard, and Leary's work was a whole decade later. I mean, the documents that I unearthed in the Library of Congress demonstrate what I believe are the earliest CIA programs in what they called psychopharmacology, but we can call hallucinogenic mushrooms because that's what they were. And the CIA, indeed, as you pointed out, had sent a scientist under cover of being an anthropologist to Mexico with a team of civilian researchers in search of this elusive drug that allegedly opened the doors of perception. So it was this old Aztec legend that the shaman, the local shaman, so the man who allegedly had the divinatory powers to begin with, would take this hallucinogen and would and the powers would be enhanced. And this shaman would be able to tell you everything. These are quotes from the CIA documents, which I just love. The way of the future, or where, who stole your donkey? That was a direct quote, right? So you can see the both the big picture applications for CIA, you know, who will win the war, versus, you know, who stole your donkey? The sort of real practical application of this, if it could work.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, and of course, what the CIA is looking for is considerably more complicated than that, unless they're looking for Premier Khrushchev's donkey or something like that, presumably. How many of these programs are still going on? To what extent does this still continue now?
What I was able to bring to the fore was the fact that organizations like the Office of Naval Research went on record stating, yes, we do have these programs, but we call, you know, that are, for example, advanced perceptual competence. That's essentially the new name for ESP. That program was born of a situation in Iraq where you had soldiers who were in the field on the ground who said, don't go, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but this is in essence what happened. Don't go down that alleyway. I have the sense there's an IED there. They'd send a robot into the field, and of course there would be an IED there. That soldier then gets studied. So you can see the Defense Department is now very interested with the advances of technology, looking at the brain, how it works. And again, going back to that idea of the magic mushroom, okay, can we enhance this through either psychopharmacology or other means?
Interesting. So in a way, they're just trying to kind of extend intuition through technology, if you want to phrase it in a non-woo-woo sort of way.
I think that's a perfect way of phrasing it. And that was really kind of the aha moment for me, where I realized, this is not as much about someone with a turban sitting around and saying, you know, I see war on the horizon, as much as they're looking at this biological process that some people have, where they have an intuitive sense about things.
Do Agents Mulder and Scully ever get frustrated that you keep going back to them again and again as sources for your books?
You know, I tell you, truth is stranger than fiction. That's always the bottom line here. And I find all my work as a national security reporter, you know, I like to go to the more controversial subjects. I'm not afraid of kind of opening those cans of worms. I try to interview people on both sides of the aisle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what do you find? They have tentacles of truth amongst these conspiratories that really interest people on a cultural level.
Annie Jacobson, the author of Phenomena, The Secret History of the U.S. Government's Investigations into Extrasensory Perception and Psychokinesis. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you for having me. Happy trails.
That's all the time we have this week on Now It's the News. Now It's the News was created and produced by Derek Blair. For more information, go to nowitsthenews.com. Follow us on Twitter at Now It's the News. And until next week, I remain yours truly, Derek Blair.
Happy trails.
Mike Hewitt here. I'm confused. Why is our national dialogue, the push and pull between left and right, always focused on how much more money is required to solve the problems of our state and federal governments? How come it's never about spending taxpayer dollars more wisely? Where are the candidates proclaiming that they can do the same or more with fewer dollars, the direct result of their incredible stewardship of the public trust? Seriously, it doesn't matter how big the problem is, the nature and the details of the problem, how long it's been a problem, how much has already been spent to solve the problem, and so on. In fact, specifics aren't important whatsoever. More money is always desperately required to solve the tragic and life-threatening problem. Combined apathy? We don't seem to care too much. Are facts not important? And why is poor stewardship most often rewarded with re-election? Visit themikehewittshow.com and tell us what you think.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump said on Thursday he'd be open to meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un despite abruptly ending the summit 6 weeks ago in Vietnam. Former ambassador to the UN Bill Richardson is not a fan of sitting down with the North Koreans once again.
I believe right now a summit with Kim Jong-un would not be a good idea. But I did like what the president said. Maybe smaller deals are possible. I think that's showing flexibility on both sides.
Arizona Governor Doug Ducey is thanking Vice President Mike Pence for visiting the U.S.-Mexico border. Pence was in Nogales on Thursday, where he got a briefing on border security and met with Border Patrol agents. Governor Ducey also says what's happening at the border is not a partisan issue.
This is an issue of public safety, border security, and national security, and not just for Arizona, but for the entire country.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
The great thing about facts, they're proven. Like the fact that crude oil contains impurities. Or that base oil made from natural gas is 99.5% free of impurities. And the fact that Pennzoil is the first synthetic motor oil made from natural gas, not crude oil. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. Based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. Available on Amazon.
Let's have a chat about your debit card, the card you use for the things you buy every day. What if you could get cash back every time you bought those things? Well, now you can. Introducing Discover Cashback Debit. Just open a Discover bank account and start earning 1% cash back on up to $3,000 in debit card purchases every month automatically. Plus, there are no monthly fees or minimum balances. Now you can get cash back on the way you like to pay. Open a Discover bank account and get the debit card with cash back. Go to discoverbank.com/debit. Limitations apply. Excludes money market accounts. Discover Bank member FDIC.
Acting Secretary of Defense Patrick Shanahan says more support will be sent to the southern border to fight the influx of illegal immigration.
Shouldn't come as a surprise that we'll provide more support to the border. And the way I tend to frame that is our support is very elastic. And given the deterioration there at the border, you would expect that we'd provide more support.
Defense officials are calling for the creation of a U.S. Space Force. USA Radio Network's John Clemens has more on the story.
In testimony before the Senate Armed Services Committee, Acting Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan asked for the funding of a Space Force in the fiscal year 2020 National Defense Authorization Act. He testified about the threat to America.
Both China and Russia have weaponized space with the intent to hold American capabilities at risk. Every member of this committee has access to the classified threat picture, but the bottom line is the next major conflict may be won or lost in space.
This is USA Radio News.
The best sleep of my life has been since I got a MyPillow and since I got my Giza Dream sheets. I have to tell you, I've slept in some great hotels in my time, but nothing like these Giza Dreams sheets. Now go to MyPillow.com, click on the Giza Dreams Sheet Special. You'll find out all about them and use my promo code USA to get 30% off and free shipping. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the Giza Dreams Sheet Special, use my promo code USA.
With the legalization of recreational marijuana in more states, some people thought that the black markets for the drug would go away. But is that the case? Kevin Savitt is the president of Smart Approach to Marijuana, and he shares what happened in Colorado after pot became legal.
Well, drug dealers love legalization. They get, well, because they get to undercut the legal price. So the government, in all its wisdom, taxes marijuana, thinking that it can pay for schools, which, by the way, it's not paying for any of that because the tax revenue is pennies. And the drug dealers, they're not going to go to dental school when pot is legalized. They diversify and they lower their prices. They still make a hefty profit.
And regarding crime rates, Sabat tells Fox News,
the crime rate has gone up in legalized states. And even Gavin Newsom in California, who loves marijuana and actually ran on it, he is now sending in the National Guard, if you can believe it. He's called on Trump's National Guard to come into California for these illegal grows because they're everywhere. They're destroying the water supply, energy. It's a huge environmental concern, public lands. It's a really big issue.
And finally, as far as this being a states' rights issue, Sabat believes?
There's no, I don't really believe in states' rights for marijuana because it affects other states. You know, Colorado growing 5 times more marijuana than they can legally consume, that gets exported to Idaho and Wyoming. They didn't vote for this. So, you know, a lot of people are saying it's a states' rights thing. It's not states' rights at all because we're getting all the extra marijuana. They're growing way more marijuana than they can legally consume.
So please remember, you can always find us online at usaradio.com. And for USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Good afternoon.